gentlemen, it's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yes, yes, indeed, it does feel good. Welcome to the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on their second week of their vacation. Well-deserved. What they do is they have 2 weeks of vacation during the summer. They split them up so that they don't leave you hanging for more than 2 weeks. You don't have to deal with me for more than 1 week at a time. It can be very overwhelming. I know that when I'm here, I try to pack far too much information into far too small a time. But I'm not here. I don't do this for a living. So I have to pack my whole year of radio into 1 week. And it's just, I need a shoehorn with all these stories. And especially right now, because if I'm talking, feverishly fast, or if I'm really going at you today, it's because there's a fire. Yeah, there's a fire here. Not here in the studio, not quite yet, anyways. We're actually at the Progressive Talk AM 1150 studios in Los Angeles, and you can pretty much see the smoke and fire right out our window. And the fire is gathering around a series of towers, actually, that put the signal out to a lot of different places. So if I go off the air kind of in the middle of things and you hear sort of a crackling noise, I'm probably safe because I probably doused myself with my water and run out the door. But that's why we the fires are raging quite a bit. And if you are in the local Los Angeles area and you want fire information, go to the AM 1150 Progressive Talk website. There are links there. There's even a webcam that one of the stations has up where you can watch fire, which it's like. Rebecca, our call screener, was saying it's like a Yule log that's really frightening. It's like being attacked by a Yule log video. That being said, I will try to stay on the air as long as possible, ladies and gentlemen. As long as it is possible to release a signal out, I feel like I'm in War of the Worlds. That's what I feel like. Yeah, if you hear a big that's probably the aliens coming for me. Wow, what an old reference. Fantastic. Well, I'm getting them in there today. So welcome to the show, and again, to Steph and the Mooks, don't listen to the show. It's in good hands. I will be just fine. Try and relax on whatever beach or spa situation you are actually in. I think currently Stephanie is being dipped into some mud as we speak, because that's her. She prefers kind of the Achilles treatment, I think they call it, where they take her by one of her ankles and just goop her down into some stuff, and that's why she looks fantastic. I can't argue with the results. I can't at all. I think she looks terrific, obviously. So, where are we going to start? I'll tell you where we're going to start. This week is going to be all about uncommon sense. That's right. You hear up and down from Glenn Beck and that ilk that, man, you know what's missing today is some common sense. Just some common sense. Now, keep in mind, when they say common sense, these are the kind of people who go, hey, man, if there's a fire, you put water on it. Grease or no grease? This is the kind of common sense that they would do. Hey, you got a wound, sew it up. Don't pull out the bullet. Just leave it in there. There's a commonality. You know, Mountain Dew tastes good. There's nothing wrong with gargling with it. This is kind of the common sense they're talking about. You have to take that into account. And the uncommon sense is to go, okay, I'm going to take the long view. That's what's actually become uncommon in our idea of sensical thought in this country. So people like Paul Krugman, for example, who, you know, not necessarily a cheerleader for the Obama administration, you know, not necessarily running immediately to pick up after Obama or make him look better than he's doing, which, by the way, being a patient liberal, I'm quite comfortable, and we'll talk about that later, and you can call in and debate me on it all you want. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number, by the way, and I'd love to hear from you. Paul Krugman actually has an op-ed in the New York Times called "Till Debt Does Its Part." We have known all, you know, for a while that Krugman is a big believer that that running up debt and to actually, you know, doing stimulating spending, he actually believes Obama didn't do near enough, and he basically makes the case that the only problem we have is not economic. In the stimulus and in running up a debt to cover these things, it's political. That are where you know, where's our nerve? Where's the line for our nerve? So I'm going to read. Can I get a little bit of the music for the, like, the, I guess, the film strip music? Let's say some background since we're going to educate ourselves. There we go. So Paul Krugman, that's lovely. That's great. I feel like I should be made out of clay right now and skipping. So the new budget projections show a cumulative debt deficit of $9 trillion over the next decade. According to many commentators, that's a terrifying number, requiring drastic action, in particular, of course, canceling efforts to boost the economy and calling off health care reform. Joe Lieberman himself said, we cannot afford health care reform right now. Actually, he said, we can't afford healthcare reform. He's like the melty version of Pat Robertson. Anyways, the truth is more complicated and less frightening, as it often is, if you notice. All right. Right now, deficits are actually helping the economy. In fact, deficits here and in other major economies save the world from much deeper slumps. The long-term outlook is worrying, but it's not catastrophic. The only reason for concern is political. The United States can deal with its debts if politicians of both parties are, in the end, willing to show at least a bit of maturity. Need I say more? Okay, this is where we run into our first problem with dear old Paul, is maturity. That's the hard, that's the tough part. When you've got tenthers out, and we'll deal with them in a little bit as well, maturity is not a part of this conversation. Okay, so there are two main reasons for the surge in red ink. First, the recession has led to both a sharp drop in tax receipts, an increase in spending on unemployment insurance and other safety net programs, and secondly, large outlays on financial rescues. And I would also like to say, not to mention, the Iraq cost and the Afghanistan cost being actually put on into the budget. You know, we've been signing this off in an emergency funding and pretending it doesn't exist. Kind of like having a credit card your wife doesn't know about. That's, you know, we're not dead, honey. I don't know who those people are calling. I don't. What do you mean there's a Capital One card with $30,000 worth of pay-per-view on it? I have no idea what you're talking about. That was off the books. Now that it's on the books, it's a little scary. Okay, so basically he makes the point that it's good to run a deficit during this time. We've dealt with this with Paul before. He's even, you know, like I said, pushed for an even farther a higher level of debt, and, you know, really, really paying, I mean, on the level of the national highway system, like rebuild the country from the ground up almost dollar by dollar. It's a, you know, he's looking at this, but over the, if you look at the math, and this is the point I wanted to make, we're looking at a rise in the debt GDP ratio of about 40 percentage points. The real interest on that national debt, if you subtract inflation, will probably be around 1% of GDP or 5% of federal revenue. It starts to sound less like an overwhelming burden in that thing. The numbers, tell you what, by 2019, net federal debt will be around 70% of GDP. That's not a good number, according to Krugman, but it's within range that has historically proven manageable for advanced countries. Belgium in the early 1990s, which is deeply divided along linguistic lines, had a net debt of 118% of GDP, while Italy, which he says is, well, Italy, had a net debt of 114% of GDP. Neither of them faced a financial crisis. There's an element of, in these circumstances, in these times, you really need to go into debt. Now, this is, you know, the cleanest analogy I can make is when you're, you know, we've been living in an apartment, and it's time for us to grow up and live in a house. And when you buy a house, you accrue a lot of debt, an almost unmanageable number. Anybody who sat down and signed mortgage papers has seen that number and freaked out. The payment is what makes it seem reasonable. And we've, you know, of course, dealt with some of those numbers being played with. But the point being is that when you're buying a house, when you're going, you know what, I'm tired of throwing money down a hole. I'm not, this is just wasteful. I spend $1,800 a month on a, you know, a one bedroom in, you know, Pacoima. And that's not right, considering my neighbor owns a home that he pays, you know, $900 a month for. How is that possible? So I'll get a second mortgage for the initial loan payment, and I'll and you accrue all this debt, and it's just the scariest thing you've ever signed in your life. But ultimately, you know, it makes more sense than just continuing to pay into a hole and never getting anything back, and you start building equity, and it starts having some meaning. That's the situation we're in. As a country, we were living on credit cards, and now we're making an investment. That's the difference. When you start putting money into infrastructure payments, into health care, into stuff that will measurable and education will measurably make a difference in how the country can make money and be competitive in the future, then you're no longer an apartment dweller on a national scale. And that's the goal. That's what we're, you know, that was the Obama move, I think. That's the direction he wants to go. And that's why I think he's moving slower than some would like, because, you know, basically he was handed the mortgage papers before he even, you know, before he came into office. This has already been signed. You haven't looked at the deal. There may be in a couple of years the price might go up. But we'll see you later. We didn't worry about it. Dick and I are going to be hunting in Texas, shooting at each other. And the Bush administration basically signed a lot of this into the circumstance that it's in. And they just kind of ran off and went, hey, you're a problem. Bye. And so there's some fixing that needs to be done. And then on the other hand, there are some new things that have been put off for so long that we have to deal with them. And that's the adult thing to do. That's the maturity that Paul Krugman is talking about. So I think the important thing for us to have in this is being both, on one hand, attentive to detail and patient. These are both exhausting concepts, I know. This is the two most tiring aspects of being a good citizen. You know, is that you have to, it requires time, it requires attention, it requires care. And, you know, and it's even more difficult when the other side that you're dealing with is, of course, you know, screaming. Their idea of an argument is nuh-uh. You know, when you have armies of people standing out, at, you know, at these town hall meetings, and their argument is, no! That's not really an argument. It's like the old Monty Python. This is an argument. This is just contradiction. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. This is just contradiction. No, it isn't. Yes, it is. I came here for an argument, not a contradiction. Yes, you did. No, I didn't. You know, this is really what our debate has boiled down to. I'm going to take a caller real quick because we've already got calls coming in. It's fantastic. I want to go to Dennis in Madison. Dennis, you there?
Yes, I am.
Fantastic. How are you, sir?
Very good. You started out your show with what I believe is one of the most misused phrases in the world.
Yes.
Common sense.
Right.
Okay, everybody knows what sense is.
Mm-hmm.
Now, common means that everybody in the set has it.
Right.
So now, if you have common sense, you are talking about the person with the least amount of sense.
Right, that's true. There's the lowest common denominator of sense around. Like, look, I know not to hit myself in the face with a hammer and then go to a job interview. I know that. That becomes the level you're dealing on, which doesn't really help when you're going, you know, actually, whenever Democrats come into office, the debt goes down over time, and every time the Republicans get in office, it goes up over time, no matter what it does in the first couple of years while you're settling stuff, and debt can be, you know, is a serviceable thing that helps the economy eventually. Look, man, I don't understand that. Look, you're like, it's that debt is like hitting me in the hammer with the, you know, in the face with a hammer before I go to a job interview. This is the conversation we're having. What,
yeah.
You're in Madison, Wisconsin?
Just outside Baraboo, Wisconsin.
Baraboo?
Yeah, it's Clown Town, the home of the Ringling Brothers Circus.
Of course it is. Why wouldn't you have the in Quantum outside of Baraboo? That's fantastic. I'm so surprised you're not calling me from an igloo with names like that. I gotta go. We're gonna I'm coming up against a break in a minute. But thank you for your call and feel free to use uncommon sense all you want. Cheers.
Okay. Thank you.
Bye. That's, you know. When you look at some of, and we will deal with some of these, I mean, as when we get back from the break. By the way, we have as a guest this hour from my home state of Kentucky, John Yarmuth is going to be on the line with us in a little bit, Representative John Yarmuth, to talk about health care and to talk about the necessity of it. Yarmuth is actually a fan of passing it with, 51 votes. What a crazy notion. So we're going to take a break. We will come back right after this. I'm Hal Sparks filling in on the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's a combination of low self-esteem, low blood sugar, and mixing red wine with my dog's painkillers.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yeah.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on their second week of vacation. I'm very excited to be here. It's, you know, I want to talk about this. We have a guest coming up in the bottom half of the hour, top of the bottom half of the hour. How do we say that in radio speak? It's good. Anyways, John Yarmuth from Kentucky, Representative John Yarmuth, is going to be talking to us about health care. And one of the big weapons that everybody seems to use is, you are saddling our children with debt. I don't want my children to be paying for the debt of this. Okay. Now, granted, there's an element of getting spending under control. That seems to be across party lines. It seems to be a nonpartisan issue. It just seems to be that what that cutting has to be always ends up being very partisan. And it always seems to come out of people, out of the actual living conditions of the American people. Very seldom have I heard a Republican go, "We got too many bombers. You cannot solve a war by throwing money at it." You know, but with education, man, that's exactly what they say. Now, let's looking at the national debt and looking at running up a debt, the deficits for a time to solve an economic problem are very, you know, it's very distinct. By the way, I can't wait to talk about these the governors who are coming out and going, the stimulus has not worked, nothing, who are also parading around their states holding up giant oversized checks like they're giving out lottery winnings to each of the people in their states. Bobby Jindal of Louisiana, Mitch McConnell from Kentucky, who, you know, Tippy the Turtle, I like to call him, Tim Pawlenty, who's the quote-unquote great white hope of the Republican Party for the next election. But here's the thing. You know how much it costs to raise a child? If you have a child right now, you know how much it costs to get him through high school or her through high school? $212,000. If you have a baby right now, over the cost of that time that kid is alive, $212,000. That's without college. That's without private school. That's just public school. $212,000. It's like the same deal with buying a house. If you're buying a $600,000 house, that's a big chunk of money. But you spread it out over time, it makes more sense. It's the exact opposite thing as when we deal with in America of, you know, how much pork we eat or how much sugar we consume. And, you know, you hear those huge numbers like the average American consumes 4 oil drums worth of sugar in their life. Seems like an immense amount. But then when you take it in, you know, 4 spoonfuls a time in your mocha latte or, you know, in those sodas or in the Dr. Pepper you drink by the case, you know, that little drip is actually what makes that large amount possible in the negative and in the positive. The point I'm trying to make is we want to solve big problems unless we can write a big check for the whole thing to live in that house where we can be healthy. We're not going to be able to do it, but we can do it if we spread it out over time and do it smart. So after we come back from the break, we're going to have Representative John Yarmuth from Kentucky. Kentucky. And I'll have some very personal questions because he probably lives close to my mom. This is Hal Sparks. I'm filling in on the Stephanie Miller Show.
You figured, oh, here's a loser, you know, a deadbeat.
Well, aren't you?
Well, yeah.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Stephanie. On the line, I'm very grateful to have Representative John Yarmuth from the great state, the great Commonwealth of Kentucky. John, are you there? Oh, wait, there he is.
With you.
There you are. How are you?
Yeah, doing great, thank you.
So nice. By the way, after we get done talking, I'll tell you where my mom lives, and you can go by and say hi to her. She's
okay. I'd be happy to.
Yeah, okay. I wanted to talk to you about the healthcare reform. You know, obviously, the argument has been weighted, and I don't actually think there's a legitimate debate going on, you know, in the public sphere anyways right now. I think there's a lot of shouting from one side and the attempt to speak peaceably on the other.
I think that's right. Absolutely.
And, right. And when you have polls coming out that say, you know, 40% of people think that there are death panels and believe that kind of stuff, then you can't actually say that people are for or against it, I think, as a whole, because if you believe lies, then you're not actually for or against what we're actually talking about. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you make a great point. I mean, I did a call-in radio show here yesterday, and a woman called in and was outraged because the House bill would allow the government access to your tax returns. I said, hello? Who do you think? think you send your tax returns right. too. I mean, the information out there is just so
right.
so misguided. I know there's a list of 48 claims that have been made by opponents of the bill and PolitiFact.
Yeah.
Has said that only four of them are actually accurate. So, you know, you're right. You can't be against or for something that you don't understand, or at least you can be for or against it, but your position is not based on
right.
reality.
It's like,
so it's really not particularly useful.
Exactly. You end up being like a NASCAR fan at a baseball game going, how come none of them are driving? You know, like, that's not the
exactly.
point. That's not the game you're watching, dude. Yeah, Newsweek even has a big article this week on the five biggest lies in the healthcare debate, which is, I mean, that must have been difficult to pare that down. The main ones being you'll have no choice in what health benefits you receive, which is absurd
right.
because the whole point of a public option and the use of the word option is to clarify the point that you don't have to be on the system. It's an addition. No chemo for older Medicare patients, which is just absurd.
Mm-hmm.
illegal immigrants will get free health care. Yes, we're going to take it from old people. That's what we're going to do. We're going to take it from old citizens and give it to new illegals. Death
right.
panels will decide who lives
right.
because everybody really wants Logan's Run. And the government will set the doctor's wages, which
right.
and I'm guessing when the AMA signed off on this, that should have put a pin in that argument.
You would think so. I mean, some of the, and I've had a lot of interesting meetings with groups where they raise these issues, and I say, you know, have you ever stopped to ask yourself why we would do that? And I said, look, take the death panels, for instance. You know, from a strictly partisan perspective, I'm a Democrat. Senior citizens have traditionally been big supporters of Democrats.
Right.
So why would we want to kill them?
Right. It's the,
I mean, it's like,
yeah, it's the old Judas Priest is telling their fans to commit suicide in their records. Like, yeah, that's what we want to do. That's how you sell more records, is put subliminal messages to kill yourself in your own records. That, yeah.
Yeah. there's just common sense has vacated the debate.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, you know, I was saying earlier, you know, I think it's time to start talking about some uncommon sense, or the new common sense with a N and a U and a umlaut. But do you find, like the poll show, that once the conversation actually starts and you are able to articulate the plan to people, that they get a lot more supportive of it very quickly?
No question about it. I was just going to say that. I spoke to a group of about 35 or 40 people in a very blue-collar neighborhood of Louisville last week. When I walked in, the mood was very icy, very skeptical. And I went for an hour and 15 minutes. I went through the plan, went through the alternatives to doing what we're proposing to do, and then went through, answered all the questions. And what was amazing was virtually everybody in that room had a health insurance issue or a health issue that would be improved by
right.
our bill.
Oh, that's the amazing point, is you have people with oxygen tanks coming in there that are paid for by Medicare, more than likely, you know, going, they're going to unplug this. No, they're the ones who keep it plugged in the first place. Private insurance would unplug it.
Yeah, we had a couple there. They were in their 50s, and the man asked a very hostile, challenging question, which I answered. And then the wife said, well, let me tell you what our situation is. We're 55. 8 months ago, my husband lost his job. We lost our coverage. We're now paying $700 a month for the two of us. And you know they weren't making joint income more than $25,000.
Right.
We just weren't. And she said, we have high deductibles, high copays. And 2 weeks ago, I had to take my husband to the emergency room, and the insurance wouldn't pay for it. And I said, you know, you're exactly the reason we're doing this.
Right.
I've heard stories like this virtually every day for 3 years, and that's why I'm so passionate about it.
Yeah.
And I explained how this bill would hurt them, would help them, and we would cut their premiums by about 75% and provide them coverage. Doesn't matter what their pre-existing condition is, they can always get coverage. And they said, oh, well, that sounds pretty good.
Right.
And that's the way it was throughout this room.
Yeah, I think that, you know, that's one of the reasons why. Why, if you look at how the right has been attacking this, they've been saying stand up, shout down, you know, really fire back with hyperbole and just, you know, stand your ground, those kind of random things. Don't let them get a word in edgewise, because quite frankly, they don't even want those people to hear the conversation. They don't want, you know, Fox News does not want their listeners to go to a town hall and actually hear what their Democratic rep is saying, because if they do, they're going to come back and turn the channel.
Exactly. And I've been doing nothing but talking about healthcare. I mean, 5 or 6 hours a day for the last few weeks. And what's amazing, what's so encouraging to me is, first of all, the questions are the same all the time, mm-hmm. and they're easily refuted, the objections. And nobody has come up with an argument as to why, for either why what we're doing won't help a hell of a lot of people, and secondly, whether there's any alternative to doing this. And I always ask, I say, what's your idea for changing the system? Well, I don't know, tort reform. I mean,
right.
But, you know, the kind of.
Yeah, it becomes
pretty much, it's rhetorical more than anything else.
Yeah, well, you know, and tort reform, as a solution to is an after the fact solution, and it certainly doesn't help anybody who's just got a. There's no such thing as tort reform helping with medical costs when you've got a cancer therapy that over the course of a couple of years trying to keep you alive accumulates a $700,000 debt. That's most people can't buy a house that has that, and one in four people is going to have that level of cancer in their life.
Half the
people in this country are going to die from heart disease, which means the last 6 months or 5 or 10 years of their life are going to be spent dealing with that in a huge economic way, and on the level of a second mortgage. And I think if you could, if people started getting that idea, is that. We're dealing with this on a public and governmental level because we as a group of citizens can collectively bargain for better health care and a better cost for our own health care. It's the equivalent of saying you don't have to buy a second house. You can rent it, basically. It's going to cost you something, but it's not going to cost you everything.
Right, exactly. And I'm in the middle of this book by T.R. Reid called The Healing of America, where he's a journalist for the Washington Post, goes all over the world and examines all the other healthcare systems. And it's a very fair treatment. And what he says is, look, there are no perfect systems. Everybody in every country around the world complains to a certain extent about their healthcare system. Everybody's always trying to tweak it. But the fact remains that virtually every industrialized nation does things better than we do. Efficiently, more cost effectively, and their healthcare outcomes are substantially better than ours.
Right.
So
that's
are we going to do the perfect thing? No, we're not going to do the perfect thing. We'll be tweaking this and working on it for as long as we're all alive.
Right.
But we've got to start working on it because right now it is we can do far, far better than we're doing.
I couldn't agree more, and it's so great to have somebody else from Kentucky who makes sense. It is so great to talk to you. Representative John Yarmuth from Kentucky, it is so great to talk to you. The next
Thanks,
time I'm
Bill.
Home visiting my family for the holidays, we should meet up and talk in person.
That'd be great.
You're a bright shining light, my friend. Thank you so much.
Thank you. We'll have a bourbon together.
Indeed. Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Take care, Al.
Fantastic. There you go. I mean, what more can you say? Fantastic way to start the conversation. So I'm Al Sparks. I'm filling in for Stephanie on the Stephanie Miller Show while she's away on vacation. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. Call in. There's plenty to talk about, from debt to death panels. We've got a couple people on the line already. I'll get to you guys right after we get back from the break. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
No need to thank us. It's what we do.
Who the hell are you guys?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
You using the whole fist, Doc?
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Moots while they're away on vacation. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. We're going to go to, we're going to take Bob in Tacoma.
Hey, hello there. How you doing?
I'm fantastic, Bob. How are you?
Hey, I'm from Kentucky also, so there's three of us.
Look at that. And look how smart we all are. Okay.
I was beginning to be embarrassed to be from Kentucky, to be honest with you.
Hey, remember, you, me, Representative John Yarmuth, Johnny Depp.
Hey, cool.
George Clooney?
Well, hey, oh, yeah, George, yeah.
Apparently there's something in the water.
Hey, well, not enough of it. Republicans probably got the term death panels from the health insurance company.
Right.
Because when they deny you care because of pre-existing conditions or because you can't afford a policy, and a lot of times even when, like well, for me, if I have heart disease, I lose my job, I lose my insurance, they would say that I could not be covered for the thing that I will probably die of.
Right.
So in other words, there are already death panels, and it's really funny the way this thing's always turned around. You know, when there were some fascists in the government in the last one, they weren't calling George Bush and Cheney and all those guys what they were.
Right.
But now they're flip-flopping it, and above all the people, that's what they're doing. So my point is that there are death panels, and that's probably what they kind of jokingly call it in the health insurance. I'm not saying I know that for sure.
No, I know exactly what you're saying, and that is absolutely the case. The you know in all the insurance companies, they have a group of people, or even one guy in some sense. I mean, how many stories do we need to hear
right.
of a guy with basically a rubber stamp that denies coverage people?
I'm on the Mad as Hell Doctors tour.
Uh-huh.
I wrote their theme song. It's called Mad as Hell.
Okay.
And they are a group of doctors from the Physicians for National Health Plan,
uh-huh.
and they really want single payer health care. And they get out there on the road. They're leaving on September 8th from Seattle, going all across the country. They've already been on like other shows, Tom Hartman and Ron Reagan and everything. And you really should. They're great people. They're a great interview. But not only that, they are really out there caring about people who are being ripped off. And they just say it's run as a business. It's run for profit. It's not for people.
No question.
And they really need to be heard. And people can go to their town halls, their public forums all across the country. All they need to do is go to madashell.com. They can listen to the song under the theme song, or they can just find out everything they need to know about single payer. They can meet the doctors that are on the road. And there are people that are practicing medicine. There's one gentleman that retired from the Mayo Clinic.
Mm-hmm.
And what I'm saying is they are incredible. We were at their they did a dry run in Squim, Washington last week. And they had in Squim, they had packed a high school auditorium with people who were interested. There were teabaggers there, but once the doctors started, they couldn't say anything. They would be like fools to be saying, to yelling down people who were really trying to
help.
Do something
right.
for them.
Right. Well, that's fantastic. You know what, Bob? I'm going to put you on hold, and I'm going to get Rebecca to take your information, and maybe we'll try to get one of them on as a guest later on in the week as we talk about this.
I would love for you to. They are incredible, and like I said, they kick off there on the 8th. They leave from Portland, and they come up to Tacoma. They go to Seattle, and then they're heading across the country, and then there's going to be a rally in Washington, D.C. on October 1st.
Okay, great. And what was the website again?
It's just madashelldoctors.com.
Madashelldoctors.com. Thanks a lot, Bob. We'll talk to you soon.
Thank you.
Okay. You know what? And there's Sarah, who's also in Tacoma. Sarah, do you know Bob? Are you?
No, I don't know Bob.
Oh, well, you guys should hook up because apparently you have this, you know, you are of like mind.
Yes.
You wanted to call specifically because?
MoveOn.org is organizing nationwide candlelight vigils to support the public option and honor Ted Kennedy. These are going to occur on Wednesday, September 2nd in the evening all over the country.
This Wednesday?
Yeah, Wednesday, September 2nd. You can go to MoveOn.org to find a vigil near you.
That's great. Well, thank you very much, Sarah.
Thank you, Hal.
That's awesome. Yeah, cheers. There is, I think, and if you listen to the argument from the other side, or I wouldn't even necessarily call it an argument, I would just call it vitriol. Last night I was watching Huckabee because Glenn Beck is so funny that I, you know, you. It's like when your favorite sitcom is over, you watch the half-funny sitcom after it just because you're still in the mood to laugh. Huckabee is not nearly as funny as Glenn Beck, but he, you know, he has his moments. And he had John Voight on last night. And John Voight is on his, you know, Get Off My Lawn media tour that he's doing. I love how it's amazing that we are the disgusting liberal limousine, you know, Hollywood elite, shut up and sing crowd until John Voight, you know, comes out of the thing. And then it's, you know, you're a great American for speaking out. Like, you're only a great American for speaking out. All right. Yeah. Yes, there is a double standard. I know. I hear you. So he was on last night. Huckabee. Can I get that quote from Huckabee, the first one? He's, I think, yeah, he's, it's, track number 7. This is Mike Huckabee making, his play against national health care. This is not from the show last night. This is, I think, from his radio show.
It was President Obama himself who suggested that seniors who don't have as long to live might want to consider just taking a pain pill instead of getting an expensive operation to cure them.
You guys remember that, right? Remember that during the campaign when he was in the middle of his acceptance speech, it's near Soldier Field in Grant Park in Chicago, when he said, "And citizens, once you get too old, we'd like you to take a pain pill and then jump into a big lava pit so that we can consume you as a food source." Yeah, remember when Obama said that? No, of course you don't, because that never happened. That happened in Huckabee's feeble little mind. Because he was looking at, like a lot of other people, a cut of Obama talking about healthcare and waste in Medicare and Medicaid, and the concept of how much should be paid for in work. And then what they did is basically took this woman's story about her mother needing a pacemaker at 100 years old, and then cut to him saying, you know, in some cases, doctors assign operations and treatments to you that you don't actually need, but because they're either afraid of getting sued or because there's more money in it, there's a financial incentive for them to get you to have that operation, you would actually be better off just taking some, you know, pain medication. It's like the equivalent of going in and you have chest pains, and they know it's acid reflux, but it's $50,000 if they stick a cord down your throat. And they go with the cord because, I mean, the insurance company's like, we can make money on that one. We've got other calls as well. Let's see. Kevin in D.C. Kevin, you there?
Yes.
Fantastic.
Hi. Yeah, I am the story you just named kind of ties into to what I was calling for.
Mm-hmm.
Are these people evil, sociopaths, or what? Because, you know, no one has a halo over it. Everyone, I think, lied at some point. But the energy it takes to lie and lie and lie,
right,
to extinct all the freaking time would literally, it would make me ill.
Well, you have to remember, this is, you know, if you read Jeff Charlotte's book on the family, or if you look at kind of the ideologues on the right, it's something that almost people on the left can't even wrap their head around, because I don't think that way, and I don't think you do either. But there's a certain point where they believe, you know, like the people in the family believe that anything you do in the name of Jesus is justified. Even child murder has a place, and that lying, when you're dealing with, you know, people on the other side, is not really lying. You know, when Huckabee does it, he actually believes he's doing, you know, the good work. When he lies his butt off and tells you the exact opposite of the truth, he actually thinks he's doing it for a good cause, and therefore it's justified.
But is that in other words, and I always make this point, because you shouldn't stereotype everyone in the group, and I always make the distinction. The Republicans like Kathleen Parker or Jack Cafferty,
mm-hmm,
or a Republican strategist Mike Murphy, while I disagree with them philosophically completely, they at least deal with reality.
Right.
However, the Sean Ku Klux Klan of the Insanities, and
right,
Bill O'Reilly, and the Laura Inbreds, and the, you know, the Rush Limbaughs,
right,
those people are like science fiction.
Yeah.
How do you...
You can't, but that's the thing, that's how they trigger, and I gotta let you go because I'm up against a break, but, you know, you can't fight back against that kind of thing. What you have to do is focus on the people that you can win, is start having an argument with and dealing with on a substantive level the people who are actually listening to them, and go, look, I'm on your side. Because the truth is, that's the great thing I think about being a progressive, is that you're even for the rights and security and safety and health of the people you don't like. The right is not that way. They just want us all driven out of the country. This is Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Stephanie Miller on The Stephanie Miller Show all week. 1-800-STEP-12 is our number. Call us. We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, it's The Stephanie Miller Show.
I'm walking on sunshine. Whoa, I'm walking on sunshine. Whoa, and I feel good. you got a plan, my lord?
Yes, I have, and it's so cunning you could brush your teeth with it.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Stephanie all week while she's away on vacation. We've got a bunch of callers, and I want to get to them because some of them have been waiting a long time. Jeff in Indiana. Jeff, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
Thanks for waiting, man. You wanted to talk about the Chamber of Commerce ads.
Well, you know, the ads employ free choice. These guys sit here in Indiana, and they put out fictitious ads on the employee free choice.
Right.
And now they're going to do it on health care. You know, I just wonder if this is a secret Republican organization, you know.
Well, there's nothing secret about the Chamber of Commerce leaning towards the right. You know, from a business standpoint, they really have been anti-union for a long time. You know, you don't have to go out on a limb to expect that. The interesting thing is, and I think you make a really good point, is that they use the same system. There's the same sort of message delivery system that's used in all these things. They're very well, you know, from believe me, from the rolling out of a band's new album to trying to kill healthcare, the way to advertise and carry a message doesn't vary all that much. And if you watch how they say it and how they present it, you become a lot more savvy in seeing ads, you know. And, you know, obviously I don't want everybody to become, cynical about it and have to, you know, look through squinted eyes at everything. But there's definitely something when you're watching the Chamber of Commerce and they're fighting one thing. You go, you know what, maybe these guys aren't really on my side as a consumer and as a, you know, as a citizen especially.
Well, yeah. Well, one thing about it, you know, when you listen to Rush Limbaugh or people like that, you know, that's one thing. But the Chamber of Commerce people probably take them more
very seriously.
Word, you know,
absolutely.
And there should be Democratic owners out there that belong that shouldn't put up with that stuff. Is what I'm trying to say.
I completely agree with you, and I thank you for the call. There are a few decent Republicans out there left. I don't know how they, a lot of them are calling themselves independents these days because it's quite frankly embarrassing to be in the party of Michelle Bachmann, as Rob in the OC will tell you. Rob, you there? Rob? Hello? Rob? We got you? I don't want to listen to you breathe, Rob. I'll hold on to you and then we'll come back to you in a minute. However, let's see. Steve in Canton, Ohio, you there?
Hey, I'm here.
Fantastic.
Hey, do you think our president will become more assertive here in this debate? And the second question, do you think we could peel off like one of those moderate, decent Republicans like Olympia Snow?
I think they're putting so much pressure on her, I think it would be nearly impossible. However, I do think Obama will become more forceful once the bills are out of committee. This is the hard part and the most difficult thing, I think, for patient progressives and liberals to really have to, you know, that we have to lead the charge and go, settle down, folks. The blue dogs are guarding the gate when these things are in committee.
Right.
And that's the tough part. What we have to do is kind of be a bit more understanding with the way he's going, but keep letting them know what we want. Keep the people who are actually going to vote on the bill once it hits the floor very aware of what we want. And let him, you know, go, well, you know, public option, we'll see, or whatever. Because once it moves out of the committee and people like Max Baucus feel like they're going to have cover room because we didn't put a bill out that had public option in it. We released it. Once they fuse the two bills together and they actually start going to the floor and actually get voted on, you want your representative to know and other representatives to know how important it is that not only are you going to vote for somebody who votes for it or vote against somebody who votes against it, but you're also going to give money and support to other candidates in other states who supported it. And that's really where our pressure has to be. I think as soon as it comes out, he'll be allowed to be a lot more forceful. I think, in truth, a soft amount of force will come because of Teddy Kennedy's passing.
Yeah.
That there will be, you know, I think, you know, if you notice, Obama's approval ratings went up almost 4 points.
Wow,
in the last week. And a lot of it had to do with Teddy's passing, in that people are taking this a little more seriously. We tend to want, our legislation passed like we're standing in line at Starbucks waiting for a latte.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Come on, where is it already? Because we are impatient because we sat through 8 years of Bush.
Right.
We're still dealing with the emotions of that, you know. Now, you know, we have to go, okay, this is, we want lasting change. Lasting change takes some time.
Right.
So, yeah. So, call him. Call your representative.
John Boccieri's mine. I've been on him.
Great.
Yeah, fly on you know what.
Exactly.
So, yeah.
Well, yeah, and you're in Ohio, so, I mean, that's a tough state anyways. That's a, that state's governed in six different directions. It's really fascinating.
Right. Some very ignorant people out here, unfortunately.
Well, you know, and it's built that way. You know,
yeah.
You know, one of the reasons why people need to start going, you know what, we need to get more Dems on the school boards. We need more progressives and liberals and you know, if you don't feel comfortable with whoever the Dem puts, if they put up a blue dog style Dem or a conservative Dem, then start going, okay, I'll vote for him, but I'm also going to vote for any green or libertarian or, you know, sort of open-minded liberalist that shows up for, you know, county commissioner, that shows
right.
up for, you know, for, and start, you know, raising the tide, as it were, you know, this trickle up, as it were, politics. So thanks so much for the call, Steve. I appreciate it.
Hey, take care.
Give it up. Absolutely. We're going to go to with Amanda just because I have, you know, personal reasons. Amanda, you there? Hi.
Hey, Hal. I feel so privileged to speak with you.
Oh, well, thanks.
Yeah. It's just like I am in your living room of lexicon.
Right.
Your words are so beautiful and so uncommon.
Oh, if only. I appreciate the sentiment, and I'm sure, you know, if you follow me on Twitter, I've obviously a larger field of interest than just politics, but I think that's what makes it healthy being a progressive, you know?
Isn't it, though, to be smart?
Mm-hmm.
Isn't
yeah.
it fun?
It is. It's very frustrating at times. It can be very, it's one of those things that, you know, I being smart and being patient is like being two people behind a rude person in line at a rental car counter or something. Like there's always one person who's flipping out.
Well,
you know,
it's like, does your gum have crystals?
Right. Right. You have nothing to worry about. So anyways, I appreciate the call, Amanda. I really do.
And it's really neat to talk to you. It's like I'm all tingling. I'm in your rock arena and I can feel you.
Wow.
I've never seen you and I'll probably never meet you. It's so wonderful to hear you for Stephanie, and I'm so grateful that you're there.
Well, thank you very much, Amanda. I greatly appreciate it. You know, the amazing thing is you actually can meet me. I'm, you know, when I'm out on tour, by the way, the dates are on stephaniemiller.com. One of my dates did change, my San Francisco date. For those of you listening at Green 960, I'm now coming in October, the weekend of the 9th, instead of next week. And next week I will be in Los Angeles at the Largo at the Coronet on September 10th. And then after that, in Atlanta, Georgia, and then on in to Chicago and San Francisco. It's going to be a good time. But if you do want to meet me in person, I do meet and greets and signings and all that stuff after for free and just kind of hang out. And that's because I love hearing the sound of my own voice, which is why I end up talking to, on radio as much as I do. Trina in Eureka. Trina, you there?
Yes. Hi.
Hi.
Oh, it's a pleasure to speak to you on this early Monday morning.
It certainly is. Take it easy. Remember, you know, most heart attacks happen before 9 a.m. on a Monday morning,
right.
So everybody needs to learn to take it easy. And
start out your week slow.
De-stress, right.
So I thought I would de-stress a little bit by adding a little bit of levity here.
Okay.
And then I'd like to follow it up with a thought.
Okay.
But here's a little joke. It's kind of corny, but... what is the difference between God and a doctor?
I'm going to go with God actually is God. A doctor only thinks he's God.
Close.
No. Right.
God doesn't think he's a doctor.
Right. There you go. Yeah. Absolutely. I think that joke was told in the David Duchovny film playing God at one point where he was a mob doctor.
Remember.
Anyways, there you go.
But the other thing I wanted to bring up, you know, I'm a baby boomer, young
mm-hmm.
baby boomer, and my husband had to go through, and I had to go through a lot of medical stuff, and we used to live in La Jolla, and we lost everything because of the medical. But what I don't understand is, isn't there such a saying between a hypocritical vote that you are to keep people comfortable? And even if they're dying or
mm-hmm.
they've got an illness, you know,
the Hippocratic Oath, yes.
Yeah, I keep hearing this between, well, you know, it's like you have to fall in this category. And I have severe problems which cause a lot of pain. And when I go, I feel like I'm being investigated like a drug dealer.
Absolutely. Well, you know, especially, and God forbid, you should have to change plans. Thank you for the call, Trina, by the way. I really appreciate it. Let's say you get sick, and then you get dumped by your health insurance company, the corporation that runs your private insurance. Try getting health care to cover the problem you actually have at the time. It is nearly impossible, and if it isn't impossible, you're going to end up, if you're lucky, it's the kind of thing you can go to an emergency room for. If you're not, you're just kind of stuck. You just can plan for bankruptcy. That's pretty much it. Let's go to Bill in Asheville, North Carolina.
Hey, yeah, Hal, you've got it all wrong about these Republicans. They're not lying. And we better feel that the death panels.
Mm-hmm.
When the Republicans get in charge, they're just telling us now. They're tipping their hand. They're telling us how they're going to run it.
Right. Well, oftentimes when you see people who are, it's like a jealous lover. Usually the person who's cheating is the first person who's jealous, you know? And the Republicans tend to do that a lot. They'll tell you exactly who they are by what they would expect, because if you listen to them the rest of the time, half these people will go, well, I'm an Ayn Randian kind of person, and I believe that if you don't, you know, can't pull your own weight, if you can't afford health care, then you should just die. That's what they're saying the rest of the time.
Exactly. That's the way they proved it by the way they ran FEMA.
Yeah, absolutely.
We did exactly the same thing if they ever got in charge, God forbid, again.
Hey, George Bush was saying, you know, he's going to be the CEO president. You know, that was the thing. You're going to run it like a company, and that company turned out to be Enron. Thanks for the call, Bill.
Sure.
You know, that's the amazing part, is that people go, you know what, private companies know how to do things best, man. You know, if a private company really, oh, yeah, you really want Blackwater instead of the cops? Do you really want Enron to be in charge of your health care? Do you really want to be left out of that? We've only got a minute left. I want to go to Joe in Arizona. Joe, you there?
Yeah, I'm here.
How are you?
I wanted to ask you, for the past 8 years since 9/11, no reporter anywhere has ever addressed the question of why they picked the Twin Towers as their target. It would have been so much easier just to pick one target, like the Statue of Liberty,
sure,
or Washington Monument. But they had to hijack two airplanes to bring those towers down. And the reason was that was a symbol to them of the corporate, multinational corporations who have destroyed third world countries like theirs.
Right. Well, it's really hard to run bombs into the G20 summit, as it were, and that kind of stuff, because they keep moving it around. So it's hard to create a plan for that. But those were, you're right that they were big economic symbols. That's why they hit that, and the Pentagon was the idea.
They had something to say. Yeah,
exactly. Appreciate the call. We'll be back right after this. I'm Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. I'm having so much fun today. Feel free to call in. In the bottom half of the hour, we have Lee Papa, the rude pundit, is going to come in. And I want to talk to him about Teddy Kennedy, because he has an amazing article on his website. It's rudepundit.blogspot.com. It's fantastic. If you get a chance to read it before he gets on, that's great. If not, we'll be talking to him. This is Hal Sparks filling in on the Stephanie Miller Show.
The following program is closed captioned for the thinking impaired.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Tell them to fornicate off.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. This is the second week of their vacation. I know it seems like it to people that they take a lot of time off, but they just don't, quite frankly. They spend 1 week early in the summer and 1 week at the end of the summer, and they're smart enough to put them basically around long weekends. It's very bright. It's, you know, they're squeezing that extra day out. It's good for them. So 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. Coming up at top of the bottom half, we're going to have the Rude Pundit on, Lee Papa, to talk about a bunch of different things. But I have to say that his article, his blog on Teddy Kennedy is so impressive on so many fronts, especially the list of things that you need to know that you have in your life that only exists because Ted Kennedy pushed for them. It's fascinating. It's really terrific stuff. I'll tell you a couple of them just off the top. If you like that your state and not the federal government controls the curriculum of your kids' schools, you have Ted Kennedy to thank. If you like being able to vote starting at age 18, thank Ted Kennedy. Do you think low-income people should get help with heating in their homes in the winter? Thank Ted Kennedy. It's just a great list of things that Ted Kennedy, over the course of his career, had a huge impact on this country, and I think a lot of people aren't even aware of the amount of work that he did. So I want to go to a couple more calls that we have here. Let's see. Rob in Orange County, California, wants to talk about Michelle Bachmann. Talk about an abstract idea of what truth is. Are you there, Rob?
Yeah, how are you?
I'm fantastic.
Hey, I just wanted to say a few quick points. I promise I'll be fast.
No worries.
You know, basically, someone like Michelle Bachmann, you know, as much as she's an idiot and supposed leader, anybody that doesn't understand things just needs to be taught. I'm an educator.
Mm-hmm.
They just need to be taught. They need to be explained in a calm, polite, kind way. Now, if they don't get it after that, they may, you know, it's like a seed. It takes a while.
Right.
It's not like you can insult them and go off. The other thing is, you know, right now when the economy's low and down, that's the time to invest. You buy low.
Exactly.
Yeah, you spend. We could talk forever. You're amazing, Hal.
Thanks, I appreciate it.
Well, you spend and you risk, and that's what creates growth. There's nothing wrong with spending and using money wisely. And if it's internal, it's going to be a great thing. So right now, you can feel the buzz.
Mm-hmm.
And the biggest thing that Republicans and conservatives hate is when common sense starts to make sense
right.
to them. Yeah, and they fight it, and they fight it. The other quick thing is Michelle Bachmann started to explain to, I think she thinks, people like her, that the difference between millions and billions and trillions, she went into the size, Hal,
uh-huh.
of how much $100 bills would go. Well, the size of the economy would go, someone needs to tell her it would go to Mars.
Right, you know, it's immeasurable.
Miles. And the last thing is the Chris Wallace Cheney interview.
Oh, man.
Is the epitome of the media and their failure to be honest. I mean, who is Chris Wallace? Just a loser, and that's about it.
That's well.
Time for a break.
I totally understand. We are taking a break, and I thank you for the call. It's well put. And you know, one of the things about Michelle Bachmann in this talk about the national debt, and if the bills had to be the size of what they actually are, the debt would be insurmountable. You could wrap the earth like a Christmas present. Blah blah blah. Notice that during the time that the credit default swap market, that the Republicans were responsible for doing it, you had a $36 trillion a year market based on $1 trillion worth of real estate. How sustainable was that? That doesn't even compare to what we would get by investing in infrastructure, investing in healthcare. So we're going to take a break. My name is Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. When we come back, we will have the Rude Pundit and more of your calls. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation this week. And on the line, I have the incomparable Lee Papa, a.k.a. the Rude Pundit. How are you?
Good. How are you? Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you telephonically. Radiologically.
Yeah. Wow. The level of sincerity in the room there just gets jacked up way high with you there.
Really?
It's kind of amazing.
Well, you know, it's because I don't have the comfort of Jim being able to do comedy voices to cover for stuff, so I just really have to talk from the heart or I'll just run out of stuff to say.
Right, and fire is bearing down on you.
Yeah,
right?
That's true. You become incredibly sincere and aware of your own limitations as a human being when you can see mountains raging in front of you.
When the studio could become your oven. Yeah,
exactly, so. Right. I was saying before, I don't know if you got a chance to hear, but the blog you have on Teddy Kennedy is amazing. The one that you did on the 27th about what a man he was.
Oh, yeah.
And then the list of, you know, of basically all the things that he's, you know, largely responsible for had a real crucial part of making happen.
And that list is targeted at conservatives.
Right.
It's okay. Here's stuff you seem to think you seem to like, and it's not, you know, for your wild out there conservatives, but for people we hope are mainstream or moderate conservatives.
Right.
But you know, yeah, he was behind most of the things that they actually support and actually got things done on them that helped people along the way.
Right, like girls being able to have sports teams, playing soccer, basketball, and softball at school.
Yeah, but and you know, and sure, 20 years ago that was a huge controversy, and
right.
Now it's accepted.
It's, yeah,
and that's the thing about most liberal goals is the things that seem wild and out there now are the things that are just, yeah, that's the way it is. Oh, really? You know, black people can use the same bathrooms as white people? All right, cool.
Right. Which seems, yeah, that's how, you know, what is the progression of real truth is that, you know, it's first it's ridiculed and then it's violently opposed and then it's accepted as obviously true.
Yeah.
And a lot of that could be applied to Ted Kennedy's impact.
Yeah, all of the things that he wanted to try to get done and you know, things like just, I mean, people don't understand the way that disabled people were legally able to be treated, how crappily they could be treated,
mm-hmm.
Until Kennedy came along and championed the cause of for disabled people and changed the whole, essentially changed the lives of millions of people directly. And that they could no longer just be shuffled off to the side and not be part of American society. He brought them in.
Right. Yeah. And this is, you know, the funny thing is that these are the same people that would wheel, you know, someone they know in a wheelchair into one of these healthcare forums and go, the liberals want to hurt this person. Like,
oh, yeah. And isn't that great? I love when the person in the wheelchair gets upset about that. And
right.
Because
they've been lied to and because they can't reach the channel changer, somebody else gets to dictate what they're watching all the time.
Oh, that's right. That would be great. Just a group of people in the home brainwashed and then sent out as Fox's zombie hordes of seniors.
Right. There's a great quote. I want to play a piece of audio, and maybe you've heard this. This is it's basically a GOP senator, and he's a representative rather, and he's basically telling this story. You probably heard it, where he was saying this woman had a child, her unborn child had a heart defect, and the insurance company denied her the operation for the child, that they were going to do this experimental surgery as soon as the child was born to keep it alive, and. She, you know, and so she went, she took it upon herself and she went, doctor shopping essentially to find somebody who would, I guess, do it for free. So that they do it. And this guy used this as an example of, you know, he goes, if she'd been on a public plan, she never would have gotten this option because she wouldn't have been able to doctor shop. And then this is how, you know, like the message is starting to cave in. Listen to what the audience response is.
Jenny's convinced that her son would not have been born if there was a public option plan. She wouldn't have had the choice in the world. You'll find the doctor that she wants. So this is a joke.
Oh, that's terrible.
Wow.
That's not true. The insurance company turned her down, not the government. The private insurance turned her down, not the government.
I want to thank you all for coming.
he basically, there's a little bit we edited out just for time because there's a lot of like, bye.
Thank you and good night.
Yeah. But that, I love, you know, it's amazing. Like in all these tapes, we really are seeing kind of a bellwether shift.
I think they've used their ammo.
Yes.
And now all they've got is repetition. And
right.
and the people that have been riding, you know, have been trying to lead that army are, you know, everybody else is starting to be that swing back. And
right.
I think that the threat of losing the public option has been something that has really gotten progressives to show how much it matters.
Right.
and to get out there and to contact their representatives and show up at the town halls and start to make the noise. It's great that this guy...
he was just, oh, Jesus Christ. He just like, yeah. What? And you can hear, it's so funny, when he says, the insurance company turned her down, not the government, the whole room just, it's crickets.
Yeah.
For about 2 seconds, everybody goes,
Wait a minute. Have I been lied to?
Right, exactly. That never occurred to me till now.
That the insurance company might actually do harm?
Why would they do this? I've been making this case as I've come to visit Stephanie on Hump Days with Hal, which is what I normally do with them, is that this
you
is Obama.
You lucky bastard.
Well, it's not luck, my friend. It's an acquired skill. But remember, it's okay to brag about anything you made happen. You can't brag about your height or your looks because that's genetics. But anything you worked on, knock yourself out. So my point is that I've been making the point that that's Obama's methodology. That, you know, all throughout, if we look at the last kind of three fights that he's had, which is the stimulus package, where everybody went, it's not going to, we need the money, but it's not going to go, and the Republicans are going to kill it. It went through.
Yeah.
And then Sonia Sotomayor, he puts a, and he's like, he's not, he can't let them have a, if they have big open conferences, these Republicans are going to go nuts with it. Oh, she got through.
Yep.
And then the same thing is, I think, going to happen with the healthcare situation. And I think people, after that, he might have to change his game because people will be very aware that that's how he works.
Yeah, I've always said that he plays rope-a-dope.
Yeah.
He is sitting back there and saying, all right, come on, let me see what you got. Is that it? Are you done yet?
Yeah.
All right, fine. Now, let's get on with it.
And they couldn't be happier to spend their ammo firing at the trees. This is, you know, the Republicans will come out and literally will just fire. And then by the time the real argument happens, they're just making gun sounds with their mouths.
Right.
They have no ammo left. They're just going, flaggity, flack, blang, blang. Aren't you scared? Why aren't you running?
Oh. And he let them blow it all out in August.
Right.
You know, the
when nobody's around.
Right. When people aren't paying attention as much, you know, and the family is trying to figure out how many miles away their staycation can actually be.
Right.
And they're, it's
impressive. I mean, if you look at it, you know, everybody talks about whether this is chess or not, but it's really, they know, I think most Dems know, the ones that aren't really just genuinely, I mean, on the take on a bribe level, they know that this is a game changer for the Democratic Party, that if healthcare reform gets through with a public option, this is the kind of thing that changes American lives for a generation.
Exactly. And, well, if they have the guts to actually not to let it start sooner than, I think, 2013 is what's in the plan now. If they actually get that push back, because I think it could have an effect on the 2012 presidential election if it's in effect.
I agree.
Once people see that, you know, that hospitals aren't collapsing and people aren't being left to die Katrina style on the sidewalk.
Right.
So
we'll see. Effectively, like, you know, it's the same thing as the gay marriage circumstance. You know, as soon as they, you know, gay marriage becomes allowed, and suddenly, you know, I don't know, straight couples are still going out and buying wedding dresses and getting married and doing their thing as usual. The world has not collapsed around us.
I don't know. I think Iowa's looking mighty pink.
That's going to be a fascinating thing during 2010. I think there's a chance because it's Iowa.
Right.
Of sort of bouncing back a little bit, California style, if we're not really vigilant with them. But the truth is...
Just keep the Mormons out.
Right. Well, we're, you know, again, talk about burning ammo. That, you know, they spent so much of their money on Prop 8 that, that the next couple of fights, they're not going to have any money to do it, you know.
Yeah.
And there's people who mortgage their homes to fight, you know, in Utah to fight gay marriage in California. That's... doesn't necessarily make good theological or fiscal sense to me.
No, the people knocking on my door have looked a little threadbare lately.
Right, yeah, really.
The thing that I was thinking about Obama is it must just piss off the Republicans so much that he stays, that he hasn't gotten angry. And I know that it's because he waits for the right moment to let it loose.
Yeah.
And we're all here saying, come on, come on, come on, do it. You know, fire the pull the trigger. And
we're all watching. I'll tell you what, he's really in. to use the boxing rope-a-dope analogy, he's actually in the Rumble in the Jungle. He's actually up against a rather boneheaded, powerful opponent who will use everything it has, but it will also spend everything it has, and he's actually in the fight. We are watching a Rocky movie where we think it's inevitable at one point.
Yeah.
Where it isn't necessarily. You know, in a political situation, in real fights like this, this is not. There's no inevitability. The person that you hire, or, you know, you elect to a position, there's no guarantee they're going to do what you elected them to do. So the fact that he's actually doing it is stunning. But we're watching it like Rocky. We know, you know, or the end of an episode of Kung Fu. We're like, we know you're going to fight. We know you're going to do it. Just do it.
Right, right. Or the end of a Clint Eastwood riding into town movie.
Exactly.
But you actually bring up a really good point, which is that one of the things that people forget about representative democracy is that you elect a representative because you trust that he or she is going to do a good job, and you support what they campaign on.
Right.
When these people go back to their home districts and they're being yelled at for stuff that they were open about believing,
right,
you think, well, you get to decide next election if this guy or this woman shouldn't be there anymore.
True.
You know, you elected him to go and be himself, not to go there. And every time somebody gets brainwashed by Glenn Beck, you know, mesmerized by his crazy spinning eyes, that he should change his opinion.
Right, absolutely. I got to take a break, Lee. Great talking to you. And again, rudepundit.blogspot.com. That your message on Teddy Kennedy is so impressive and so well written and so well contrived. I like your writing a lot, and I really I encourage everybody to check it out. Thank you so much.
And great talking to you, Al.
Yeah, you too, brother. It's Hal Sparks. I'm filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. 1-800-STEPH-12. We'll take your calls right after the break. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
You commie, homo-loving sons of guns.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
You know, a deadbeat.
Well, aren't you?
Well, yeah.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. By the way, I have a very important announcement that I will make at the end of the hour concerning one of the members of one of the regular Stephanie Miller radio show members. I'm not going to tell you exactly what it is. It's positive. But I'm going to wait until the end, but I want to get to a couple calls, and then I'm going to Mike has been holding for quite a while, and Mike, you wanted to talk. Mike, you there?
Yeah, I'm here. Sorry.
No worries.
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Okay, so a lot of people have been complaining about Fox News being set on TVs in places where they can't get at them, like bars and everything like that.
Right.
I would like to point out to everybody, there is a device called TV Be Gone. It's a little infrared thing. I guess it sends out a pulse across industry standards that makes TVs turn off.
Nice.
You can just hide. It's not a nice thing to do, but you're not hurting anybody. You're not hurting anything. And if they really want to, they can always turn it back off. And then turn it back off. you can find out more if you go to www.makezine.com
Okay.
And search for TV Be Gone.
TV Be Gone. That's great.
TV Be Gone. And it's awesome.
That's
and
awesome.
You can either get it as a kit and do some electronics work yourself, or I think you can buy it, you know, assembled already. So.
That's spectacular, Mike. I want those for a lot of different reasons. That's so useful. Thanks so much for the call, and thanks for holding on as long as you did, too.
No problem.
Appreciate
Thank
it.
You.
Cheers. Also, I had one of my good friends on Twitter, Craig Mayhem, put up a story a moment ago that I'll retweet in a bit. But apparently there was a problem in St. Louis, Missouri. The band there had T-shirts made for the brass section that said Brass Evolution, and it showed, you know, like saxophone players being the apes at one end, and then the human being was playing the trumpet, kind of that idea. Some parents objected, and they had to pull the shirts because they didn't believe that evolution should be taught in the schools. And they used it as, they said it was, they were being neutral to religion by removing these shirts. Evolution's not a religion. It's a scientific fact. I don't understand how that's really insane. So, well done, St. Louis. I'll see you and do stand-up there next year, and I'll speak slower, I guess. I don't know like, how we even deal with that. This hour, very excited to have Ian Millhiser from he's a legal analyst for the Center for American Progress. And we're going to be talking about a group called the Tenthers. they're a lot of fun. This is an extension of the birthers and the deathers. The Tenthers believe that healthcare is illegal and unconstitutional based on the 10th Amendment to the Constitution, and we'll deal with that in a little bit. It's pretty insane. And one of those people that's really kind of pushing that is Bill O'Reilly and his dear friend Glenn Beck. Gene in Detroit wanted to talk about Glenn.
Yes, I want to say something about this right-wing loon Glenn Beck. Mm-hmm. I don't think a lot of people are mentioning this. What Glenn Beck is doing, he's creating another Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah, I think that's a legit concern.
Yes, and these people are very dangerous. Sean Hannity, Rush Limbaugh, and Glenn Beck. They hate government so bad that they would do anything to assassinate this president or create another Timothy McVeigh.
Mm-hmm. I think there's definitely, you know, I appreciate the call. If you go to colorofchange.org, you can sign up the petition to have sponsors boycott the Glenn Beck show. Now, you know, this started when he called the president a racist and said he had a deep-seated hatred of white people. Even though he's half white, raised by his maternal grandparents and his mother was white and stuff, but somehow in that he managed to have a deep-seated hatred of white people. And so some of the, to their credit, some of the people who had been sponsoring his show pulled their sponsorship. Now, after they put him on this kind of break for a week, took him off the air and gave him a cooling-off period. And when he came back, instead of, you know, acquiescing a little bit and seeming a little more level-headed, he actually kind of went on the deep end and started fomenting this kind of, you know, right-wing outrage that, you know, the uprising and stuff. And, you know, and one of the things, you know, is that if you die with honor, you know, it's a better death and those kind of things. Like, suddenly the right-wing people who are fighting healthcare are Vikings, you know, fighting against mongrel hordes or something. Glenn Beck is, I believe, clinically insane. I think and Fox is kind of a delivery system for the drug that is Glenn Beck. And there are certain people who are addicted to it, and I'm concerned that they might OD. And it won't be us who die of an OD. It'll, you know, or them that'll die of an OD. It'll be us. So, it's rather stunning. You don't have to watch much of it. Media Matters has a ton of stuff. You can look on crooksandliars.com. They'll run the occasional clip of Glenn Beck, sort of unexpurgated and unedited. And you can see just the depth of looniness. He has basically turned into the kind of right-wing version of the Reverend Gene Scott. You know, this old TV preacher used to have a big dry erase board, and he'd connect these. I don't know if you ever saw him. He had a soup in his beard, and he used to just sit up there and just kind of ramble reading the Bible and linking Bible verses together all over the place like a big spider web. And there's a great one where Glenn Beck spelled the word oligarchy missing a letter by tying together words that he believed that represented President Obama. And he's only lucky that Obama's first name starts with an O, and that made it very easy for him. But he left out one crucial letter. Look it up on Crooks and Liars or Media Matters. It's a good time. After we come back, we're going to take more of your calls. I want to talk to Ian Millhiser about the Tenthers, and I'll tell you what they're all about right after we get back. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Stephanie Miller. It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Gentlemen, it's The Stephanie Miller Show.
This is a different thing. It's spontaneous, and it's called wit.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation this week. We have had a fantastic amount of fun this morning, and I think nothing more fun than this hour, though. If you get a chance, though, we spoke in the last little bit to Lee Papa, who's the Rude Pundit. RudePundit.blogspot.com. Is his website. It's fantastic, and he's got a great turn of phrase, and he's a great writer. This hour, we have Ian Millhiser, the legal analyst for the Center for American Progress. We're going to talk about a little group. They're calling themselves the Tenthers. They're a lot of fun. These are the people who believe that the Tenth Amendment to the Constitution, which reads, "The powers not delegated to the United States by the Constitution, nor prohibited by it to the states, are reserved to the states respectively or to the people." And they're reading that as to mean that anything that isn't specifically provided for in the Constitution is illegal, is unconstitutional, and that means everything. But specifically, health care. In a radio interview recently, Representative Carol Shea Porter from New Hampshire, she's a Democrat, made a statement where she said, you know, federal laws ensuring safe drugs and safe airplanes and the highway system are constitutional. And now she's under attack from the Tenthers, who believe that essentially everything that the federal government does is unconstitutional, that the Constitution was basically just a Federalist paper, and that the states, it's a states' rights issue. And that's, now keep in mind, the Tenth, and I'm going to get to a couple calls in a second, but the Tenthers believe that anything that isn't expressly admitted to or allowed in the Constitution is no one's business. The federal government has no business doing that, and they have used this historically for racist and sexist and classist means. This is the whole point of the Tenth Amendment for a lot of people over time has been to, you know, keep black people from being allowed to sit at the front of the bus, as it were, or women to be able to vote. This is what the Tenth Amendment is. None of your business. The federal and of course, we often believe that the Commerce Clause and a couple other clauses allow the federal government to deal with anything that crosses state lines, and healthcare certainly does that, and the impact of the way insurance companies treat their clientele actually affects people across lines. So there's a reasonable argument to be made that the federal government has an interest in controlling and mandating some level of healthcare reform and some sort of standards based on that. And we've used that as human beings, as adults, as intelligent people for quite a long time to make a progressive country. Of course, these are the people who are also, you know, purists, and that when they say constitutional, we want to go back to the way the Constitution was originally intended. They literally mean when, you know, non-whites were 3/5 of a person. You have to understand that, like that they don't just mean in a cute kind of colloquial way. They mean the real deal. But there are a couple of people on the line I want to talk to. First of which is Janet. Janet, are you there in North Hollywood?
Yes, I'm here.
You wanted to talk about Prop 8 a little bit, which is, again, you know, talking about states' rights and versus federal rights. But yeah, what did you want to say?
I've had a change of heart. I'm a black Christian woman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I love the Lord. I am down for him.
Gotcha.
And I voted yes on 8, but I've had a change of heart.
Hmm.
And you know why?
Why?
Because of you. I've been listening to you and how your fight, how you've taken up, how you support President Obama,
mm-hmm.
and how you encourage us to call our representatives, and I'm watching you, and I'm thinking, well, if their movement did the same thing that Hal is doing,
mm-hmm.
this thing is going to pass, and I want to be involved in helping it pass. So if I have to say something, or if I have to get involved to people in my church, and
right.
other black Christians,
mm-hmm.
I will do so.
That's
and the
great.
Last thing is, you guys forgot about us. The fight was in the upper echelon. You forgot all about the people at the bottom. We, the black church especially.
Mm-hmm. Well, there's been a big, you know, all through Obama's campaign, and you make a fantastic point, all through Obama's campaign, and even into this health care issue, Obama had this phone call with, you know, I think it was like 1,000 different representatives.
Yes.
And I think it's a fantastic, because there is a moral reason why we must provide health care for the people who cannot afford it. I mean, you know, if you're down with the Lord, you know that Jesus did not charge to heal the blind and the sick.
I know.
He didn't jack up the price and go, okay, I've got 2 fish, I can make them into 1,000 fish, but it's going to cost you. That's not how it went. And this idea that somehow that the only good system is a money-making system, no matter what, is immoral. It's at best amoral, in that it doesn't operate on a morality scale at all. And if we view ourselves as a Christian nation, and I think many people do, I don't. I believe we're a pluralistic religious society. We're open to everyone.
I do too.
Yes. But the Christians in this country who really believe what they say, and I think there are many of them, really look at this healthcare debate and go, you know what? This is acting as Jesus would. This is really how Jesus would behave. People, you know, is providing for the least among us.
Absolutely.
Is making sure that people are taken care of. There's no reason why every 30 seconds someone goes bankrupt because of medical bills in this country. That is an absurdity. That is horribly wrong. When they tell you you have cancer in this society, it is the equivalent of them telling you you're going to go bankrupt. There's no way around it. No one I know can afford $750,000 for 2 years of chemo to keep their husband or wife alive. And that's a shame.
You should be Obama's press secretary. I love Robert Gibbs, but I want you for his press secretary.
Thank you. I think I'm far too outspoken for that. And I appreciate, by the way, your feelings on Prop 8. I'm going to move on to another call, Janet.
Thank you so much.
Absolutely. By the way, I did a photograph for the No Hate campaign. It's floating around on Twitter right now, too. If you follow me on there, I'm at Hal Sparks on Twitter. Just one word all run together. You got to love the internet and the old Microsoft way of doing things. John in Houston has a great story for us, I think, though. John, you there?
Yes. I live in Tom DeLay's old district.
Oh, I'm sorry. Which one? Because he Rubik's cubed those districts like crazy.
Yeah, I live around the NASA area, and we have a new guy named Pete Olson.
Mm-hmm.
He's been on the government of healthcare ever since he graduated from college, and he also had a heart attack while he was serving in Congress. And
wow.
He's protected because are paying his insurance.
Right, because he has public health care. Right.
Exactly. But he went to this town hall meeting, and he's been literally parading this little boy around with him. And he's 4 years old, and he had a heart defect while still in the womb.
Mm-hmm.
And he tells a story of how that the mother went to all these hospitals, and they all turned her down, saying that, you know, he will be born stillborn, and you know, that they were sorry and all that. And she found a doctor who was willing to do surgery inside of her. She had the baby. 17 days later, he had a heart transplant. He then went on to say that, and if we have a public option, that he would have been denied service by the government.
Right.
Now, we all were furious, and I have it on videotape, which I posted on my blog at Bay Area Houston. And
we played the audio of that last hour, I think. I'll play it in a second again, but keep going.
Oh, okay. So, and we confronted him and said, who denied service to that lady in the first place?
Right.
And it was the hospitals.
Right.
His private insurances. They're the ones. And on top of that, this little boy now has a pre-existing condition.
Right.
And unlike our congressman, no insurance company is going to insure this boy.
Absolutely. There's no way he would get coverage for the very thing that he got fixed. I'm gonna let you go, but I'm gonna play that clip once again so people can hear it. Thank you so much for the call. Let's play that.
Lily's convinced that her son would not have been born if there was a public option plan. She wouldn't have had the choice in all. You'll find the doctor that she wants. This is a
That's terrible. Wow.
The insurance company turned her down, not the government. The private insurance turned her down, not the government.
I want to thank you all for coming.
I want to thank you all for coming while I pull this ripcord on my jacket and my parachute opens and I can jump out of this crazy plane that's going down that I piloted into nowhere. It's stunning to me, the lack of consistency and the comfort with the lack of consistency on the right. If you look at their argument against the healthcare reform, it is exactly mirrored to their argument against the stimulus package, for example, which you know, people like Mitch McConnell is, you know, saying isn't working, didn't work. It's clear that it didn't work, even though the timeline for it working hasn't even really even kicked in. We've spent probably a third of the money, maybe now. It's meant to be a 2-year plan. It's a long process to make sure, you know, it's going, but doesn't work at all. Meanwhile, Mitch McConnell heads down to London, Kentucky, and basically sheepishly says, "I hope London we can get some of the stimulus money for them." And he actually there was a very specific thing that he took credit for. He asked, by the way, he went on the floor and he said, you know, of the House and of the Senate, and said, you know, the stimulus has had hardly any impact at all. You do have to wonder, though, whether the stimulus has had any impact at all. This is what he said. And then yesterday, the same day he asked for Recovery Act money to be diverted, he went to Representative Ben Chandler, who did vote for the stimulus, who's a Democrat in Kentucky, toured a construction site of the Bluegrass Army Depot in Madison County, Kentucky. The facility, which is used to contain and destroy chemical weapons compiled during the Cold War, is in desperate need of repair and has leaked sarin gas as recently as last year. McConnell quickly took credit for the new construction, noting that he and Chandler inserted an additional $5 million into the 2010 budget. McConnell bragged, "This is going to be a source of significant employment. At peak, we could have up to 600 people working on this, and we believe the substantial majority of those workers will be Kentuckians." That's great. And apparently forgot that that $5 million that's being directed to that particular place was part of a Defense Department allocation for $5.8 million in the Recovery Act, specifically to that. On the one hand, they will actively come out on the floor and say, "This is crap. This will never work and never help anybody." And then they go right back to their state and pat themselves on the back for it getting through when they didn't vote for it. Not a single Republican voted for that. And I don't think you're going to get a single Republican, honestly, to vote for the health care package. But in 2-3 years, they're going to be arguing for it just like they argue for Medicare, and then say it's not a government program. It is stunning to me. We got to take a break. When we come back, I want to go to some of your calls. And then bottom half of the hour, Ian Millhiser from the Center for American Progress will be with us. And I also had that big, big announcement about one of the cast members of the regulars on the Stephanie Miller Show. At the end of this hour, the end of the show today, I'm going to tell you something. It's very good news. Very exciting. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Stephanie Miller on the Stephanie Miller Show.
So much fun, it should be illegal.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
Well, hello, Mr. Fancy Pants.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Stephen the Mooks while they're away on vacation. I'm going to go Dave in Chicago, just because I love Chicago so much. How are you, Dave?
Yeah, me too. I've got different people talking about how they fight back against the right, and I just thought I'd mention, every time I call in and talk to a lefty talk show about how I call in righty talk shows and crash them with names, dates, places, facts, and figures, the number of those calls goes up because I monitor. You know, and it's amazing how many more people call up. And not crank calls, though. Names, dates, places, facts, and figures.
It's amazing. I think a lot of people are, you know, it's apparently half the people that listen to, you know, the Limbaugh shows and stuff are listening angrily and don't agree. So it's funny that they, you know, they spend as much time listening to it as they do, but they, you know, like grinding their knuckles. I don't know why people need a white knuckle life like that, but some people do. And if you call in and, you know, give them what for, it wouldn't surprise me that those people would call in and go, "Yeah, me too."
Yeah, and the hot setup is what you're doing is interrupting the brainwashing machine.
Right.
And I've done that to people face to face, and they've gotten it. Some people will never get it, but some people will. And if we concentrated our efforts on Glenn Beck this week, they just might haul him off in a wraparound jacket by the end of the week.
Right. You know what? I don't think he needs any help from us. Thanks so much for the call, Dave. Glenn is really. I mean, we're gonna watch, I think, a decomposition of a our first kind of Britney-style news person decomposing on television, and it will be Glenn Beck. I have no doubt about that whatsoever, especially when the economy starts to turn around and people are freaking out because everything they've said is a tremendous lie. You can only go out that way for so long. Let's see. Penny, also in Chicago. How are you?
I'm doing good, thanks. If I understand these people correctly, they don't want the federal government involved in anything.
Right.
They sure didn't mind sticking their nose in the Terri Schiavo matter, did they?
Nope, not at all. That was, you know, they were fine with that kind of health care. You know, that they were fine with, you know, Bush stopping everything he did, flying back to Washington to sign a piece of legislation about someone that they had no business interfering with. I mean, arguably this kind of idea that there would be death panels, I think you can arguably say that that's how they think. You know, so you're absolutely right.
Well, the hypocrisy to me is just stunning.
Right. I mean, where were they during the Patriot Act?
Oh, thank you. What I check out from the library, there's a sign there that what you check out may be monitored.
Right.
You know, they like to preach personal responsibility to everybody else, but when they get held responsible for something they sell, you know, then they start squawking or being picked on.
Absolutely. Well, it's, you know, Move On. That's where MoveOn.org got their name from, is this idea that, you know, after the 2000 election, everybody should just move on. Forget it. You know, it's ancient history. Torture, move on. You know, that's ancient. You don't want to look back. That's absurd. But then what do they say about people who don't know their own history? Doomed to repeat it. So thank you so much for the call, Penny. I really appreciate it. We got a couple minutes left. I want to go to Marcy because she's been holding on a long time. Marcy, you're in Santa Fe. How are you?
Hi, Hal. I'm well. I have two quick points.
Sure.
One is that I think that part of the reason that the Dems, you know, we're controlling the House, the Senate, the presidency, but I think they're just afraid to pass this because this is a major change, and they're afraid that if something goes badly afterward, they're held responsible. So we just have to somehow help them find the courage to stand up for this.
Well, absolutely. I think it's, first of all, you have to let them know that you're for it. Secondly, you also have to recognize that we, as many as we have, you know, the 60 votes that everybody talks about, two of those are independents, one of which you caucuses very tentatively with the Democrats. That's Lieberman. He's got to go next time,
right,
people
right.
in Connecticut, if you're listening. And the other thing is that, you know, about 10 of them or more are what would be called blue dog Democrats, where they're in conservative zones. They're in, you know, places with not a lot of people in them, with a very Republican kind of slant in what they're doing. And so you recognize we have 45 solid votes. That's what we're working with.
You know what? The message that has to go out to those blue dog Democrats is they're willing to kill people, to let people die just to keep their Senate seats.
Right.
You know, that's unconscionable.
Absolutely.
That's just unconscionable.
And I think there's nothing wrong with wording it exactly that way.
Yeah, and they're not going to fall on their faces afterward. You know they're going to be scooped up by some kind of think tank or something if they were not elected. You know, so it's not the worst thing in the world.
They can always get a job as a Fox News contributor. That's what they often
exactly.
do. Thank you so much.
One more thing, though.
Sure.
On C-SPAN this morning, there was a woman who called in, and this is a point I've not heard made.
I got 20 seconds.
She was an abused wife. She had to go back to live with her abuser in order to maintain her health care. And she said there's a lot of people out there like that, and I think that's true of being in abusive jobs, being in abusive relationships, and they stay there just so they can get health care.
Absolutely.
You know, another point. Okay.
That's an excellent point, Marcy. Thank you so much for the call. I'm Hal Sparks. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in for Steph and the Mooks while they're away on vacation. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. I told you I was going to have to shoehorn all the information into the show today because 3 hours is just not enough time. I was trying to get to Elva in Madison before we went into the last break. I want to go to her right now, though. Elva, you there?
Yes. Hi. I just wanted to share a quote that I actually keep in my refrigerator. It is from a former Archbishop of Brazil, passed away in 99.
Mm-hmm.
The quote is, "When I give food to the poor, they call me a saint. When I ask why the poor have no food, they call me a communist."
Right. That's amazing.
And I think that's what we should be telling all of the Christians out there, to just remember what is the true message.
Right. You know, the idea of teaching a man to fish, I suppose, is carried so far in our, you know, capitalistic idea of what things are. But I thank you for the call. I really wanted to get you in there before because
I appreciate it.
Yes. Cheers, Ella. Take care. Because on the line I have Ian Millhiser from the Center for American Progress. Ian, you there?
Yeah, but good to be back, Hal.
Yeah, good to talk to you again. By the way, you guys do fantastic work over there.
Oh, well, thanks so much.
So today, you wanted to talk about this, and I also wanted to talk to you about the tenthers.
That's right.
The adding an ER to the end of something ridiculous is the new gate, as it were, you know, from Watergate to Contragate to Whitewatergate, which at least was a pun. That made sense. Now, by adding ER to the end of something, we can kind of we're now addressing a whole new group of people. The tenthers. Explain for those who don't know what a tenther is.
All right. So the tenthers are this group of people who have this crazy theory about the Tenth Amendment that says that pretty much everything is unconstitutional. So under the tenther constitution, health reform is unconstitutional, Medicare is unconstitutional, Social Security, the minimum wage, the GI Bill, the ban on whites-only lunch counters, all of these things are unconstitutional in their world. And, you know, these nuts have been with us for a while, but we're starting to see powerful people embrace their ideas. So Congresswoman Michelle Bachmann is a tenther. Senator Jim DeMint is a tenther. Several, I think 7 or 8 states have passed what are called state sovereignty resolutions,
right,
which say that the federal government has to cease and desist of enforcing all these laws that conservatives disagree with. So, I mean, this is a fringe constitutionalism that we've seen in the United States before, but it's been decades since we've seen seen it with this kind of prominence. It's really quite frightening.
Well, Bill O'Reilly the other night was actually talking about that and went fairly, you know, far down the rabbit hole talking to Megyn Kelly. They were having this whole conversation about it. And in the end, his response after, you know, she was, I guess the woman from Playboy, I forget her name, was also on there. And
right.
She was making the argument that actually healthcare and a lot of these things fall under the Commerce Clause and that, you know, because they are regulated across state lines, it's important for the federal government to start dealing with them. And he just went, you know what, it gives me a headache. Forget it. As far as I'm concerned, he goes, I want to go on record as saying it's unconstitutional. First of all, as if there's some sort of record that O'Reilly speaks on. Like he has an oath position as, you know, in work. And the other thing is that, you know, truth gives him a headache, which is, I think, an important, probably the most important part of that story. But he was furthering that idea. And, of course, Glenn Beck is pushing that as well.
No, that's exactly. I mean, the thing is, during times of historic upheaval, I think the right wing kind of latches on to fringe constitutional theories. It's just in their genes or something to do this. You know, during the Civil War was justified by a fringe constitutional theory that the states could up and leave at any time. In the Depression era, the New Deal was blocked for 5 years because the Supreme Court kept striking parts of it down, raising claims similar to ones that the tenthers used right now. In the Civil Rights era, you had the interposition crisis where states were saying they don't have to follow Brown because they have the right to ignore laws that they don't like. And so what you're seeing now is you're sort of seeing all three of these fringe theories from the past kind of rolled in together to make this tentherism. And, you know, you have everyone from, like I said, people like senators and Congress people advancing these views. And then you have nuts. There was a march last Saturday on the Texas Capitol where a bunch of actual secessionists showed up. And they
Hate America signs.
That's right. One of them started chanting, go back to the United States where you belong. This is what we're up against.
Right.
I would just laugh at them if it wasn't for the fact that we're seeing state legislatures pass laws or pass resolutions that are part of their agenda and that we see elected officials, you know, really endorsing their views.
Right. And you know, a lot of this, I think the groundswell has started with Sarah Palin in some ways pushing this meme that if you take the stimulus money, the federal government has claws in you. Remember that whole passage you did? And I don't think any of them knew what the claws meant. You know, they just kind of had this idea that, oh, no, I don't want the federal government to have claws in me. That sounds horrible. And she started pushing that. And that was really like, you can almost trace the epidemiology of this particular thought virus back, you know, a couple of months to her kind of dropping those little bombs.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, if anyone understands the resentments of the right wing in this country, it's Sarah Palin.
Right.
You know, no one is better at jazzing them up over whatever fringe ideas that they're going to have. But, you know, really what this comes down to, you know, Justice Robert Jackson, who sat on the Supreme Court several decades ago, mm-hmm. once said that the Constitution is not a suicide pact.
Right.
And, you know, and I think that these tenthers are forgetting that. You,
right.
you know, we don't have an authoritarian Constitution that demands that we repeal all the laws that we cherish and that people have fought for simply because they suddenly discover a new way of reading the Tenth Amendment. And it's the wrong way of reading the Tenth Amendment. I mean, let's be clear about that. The Tenth Amendment says simply that Congress can't do anything that is in an itemized list of powers that the Constitution says Congress can do. Well, for spending, anytime the Congress wants to spend money, the Constitution says that Congress can lay taxes and provide for the general welfare. That's a pretty broad grant
right.
of power to spend. You know, they have the power to regulate commerce, which gives it sweeping economic regulatory authority. So, you know, these tenthers really don't know what they're talking about. And, you know, and again, we see these fringe theories throughout history, and I think all that we can do is hope that good governance will lead people to reject them.
And oftentimes it does. They, you know, this ends up being kind of a spasm that that a section of the electorate has anytime you try to create any kind of progressive move for the country, where the country's about to take a huge leap forward in a positive sense. And you boil it down to the highway system. This is also one of the areas they don't agree with. They don't think it's constitutional. They use it as an example, but they don't. You know, and you talk to them or you see them in their eyes, they don't actually believe that the federal government should go, oh, sorry, my bad, and roll up the freeways. You know, that tie the country together. That's an absurd notion beyond any, you know, one's thought basis. But they use it comfortably.
Yeah, no, I think that's right. And again, you know, if you look at the three times where these absurd constitutional theories have really gained purchase in our country, the Civil War, the Depression, and the Civil Rights era,
right.
all of these were areas where, you know, the nation was going through some troubles.
Yes.
And so they latch onto the legitimate fears that people have, and, you know, and they use those fears to push something very radical.
Well, and it also it demonizes a specific group, too, and they try,
right.
and the tenth, the use that as a weapon against that side, whether it be the poor in the case of the Depression, you know, this idea that I don't want to be poor like them, so I don't want them encroaching on me, and or blacks or Hispanics or any other immigrants that are coming through during the Civil Rights Movement. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I think that's absolutely true. There's an us versus them mentality that
right.
goes on with these groups.
It's often, and a lot of times that's because, it's really not the issue. It's a mask for their other fears. You know, the tenthers are really looking at this and probably making the case that, you know, gay marriage could be legal across the country very soon. Especially if there's a groundswell that enough states do it, and they know that this is covered in Commerce Clause, this is covered in even in Pursuit of Happiness, if you want to really boil down to, you know, the very direct message of the Constitution. But the idea is that if enough states do it, then the federal government might go, well, you know, 13 of these states or 15 or 25 of these states allow gay marriage and stuff, so the rest of you have to do it too, because these people have to be able to move and live. And the Commerce Clause, it says that, you know, they can take their life as a civil union and move it to the next state over for business or life reasons, and you can't stop them. And that's one of their fears. So basically this is their way of drawing a line in the sand and making it sound constitutional, when really they're just afraid of anything that makes them feel icky.
Yeah, no, I think that's right, and I think it's good that you bring up the marriage issue, because mm-hmm. a lot of what's going on here is sort of a baby with the bathwater effect.
Right.
Where, you know, there's some people out there who object to marriage equality, and I disagree strongly with them.
Right.
But if you disagree with marriage equality, the solution isn't to throw out the entire United States Code.
Yes, exactly.
You know, the solution, you know, if you really want to prevent two men or two women from getting married, you don't have to kill Social Security to do that.
Right. I'm gonna. I'm up against a break. Can you stick around through the next break? Can we talk a little bit more?
Sure thing.
Because there's. I'm talking to Ian Millhiser, the legal analyst for the Center for American Progress. We're gonna take a break. I'm Hal Sparks, filling in on the Stephanie Miller Show. 1-800-STEPH-12 is a number. We'll be right back after this.
And we'll be right back.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show.
It's the Stephanie Miller Show. I'm Hal Sparks. Welcome back. 1-800-STEPH-12 is our number. We're almost out of time, but I wanted to keep Ian Millhiser with us because, A, he's smart, he's fascinating, he's intelligent, he's articulate. And that helps in these times when you have and I found myself in mid-argument with people going, look, I know you're conservative, but you're not stupid. That's really rough when you get to a conversation point with people where you're at that level. Do you run into that? I mean, is it that frustrating for you as well, watching this argument, this debate going back and forth?
Oh, it's tremendously frustrating. And I mean, the tenthers are just one aspect, I think, of what you're seeing throughout the healthcare debate, you know, whether it's death panels or, you know, whatever other lies that conservatives are ginning up. And it's frustrating that people believe them. You know, that said, I think, you know, I should qualify something I said before the break about the marriage issue, I think that there's two levels to what's going on here. You've got rank and file conservatives who may have a single issue like abortion or marriage that they have a strong view on, and they're willing to latch on to anything, I think, that will protect whatever that thing is. You know, some of them are just opposed to the health care plan, so they become tenthers because the tenthers promised them a way to get around that. But then there's always been a core group of elite conservatives in this country that you know, that really do support this agenda, and they see an opportunity here. And although tentherism hasn't been very much of a part of our constitutional dialogue, the Supreme Court has been pushing this agenda in small ways for a very long time.
Well, and they've been setting it up to do such, you know, they've been making sure, basically, by stocking the Supreme Court with people who are sympathetic to that idea.
No, that's exactly right. You know, Justice Thomas has written opinions that where he's avowedly taken tenther views. We actually don't know where Roberts and Alito stand on these issues. They just haven't had the opportunity to opine, and both of them tend to do a good job of keeping their mouth shut when they don't have to opine on something. So, you know, realistically, if we have another conservative president before some of these conservative justices are replaced by President Obama, we could have a tenther majority on the Supreme Court, and you know, and that's quite frightening.
Well, I mean, and they're going to deal with one of these in a, you know, in a big way. You know, the idea of, you know, are corporations a human being, or should they have the same rights as a human being, rather? You know, which logically would seem like an absurdity, because if I kill someone, if I cave their head in with a brick, I get put to death or, you know, in jail, not fined. You know, there's a certain point where you can't put a corporation in jail permanently for anything that it does, and a lot of them just get off with a $25,000 fine for, you know, doing something that leads to a generation of children being born with you know, physical defects, you know, that kind of thing. And this is, you know, that's kind of part of it, is that, well, it should just leave business alone. Business should be allowed to do anything it wants.
And then there's a huge case looming on the horizon right now dealing with the distinction between corporations and individuals.
Right.
It's called Citizens United.
Mm-hmm.
And this case involves campaign finance reform. It's been the law for something like 100 years in this country that you can keep corporate money out of politics. So states and the federal government can pass laws saying that Philip Morris doesn't get to buy a presidential candidate and Walmart doesn't get to buy a senator.
Right.
What this case is about is essentially whether or not we should toss this rule out and allow corporations that have hundreds of billions of dollars in their treasuries to go and spend them however they want to elect the people that they want to elect. So, you know, we could be entering a whole new era in our politics where, you know, Obama raised a ton of money from individual donations, but it may become impossible for that model to succeed in the future if corporations are able to give literally billions to elect to the candidate.
You could literally, you could dwarf any fundraising on an individual level if corporations were allowed to just freely give without any limitation. And to me, it's even amazing, like when you see this like corporate bundling that goes on, even that seems unfair to some degree. It's like, okay, if you want to give corporation the same rights as an individual, then those limitations should reach the same limitations as an individual.
Right. And even there, there's difficulties.
Right.
Because it's very easy to create a new corporation. You just generally have to file paperwork.
Right.
And one corporation can own another corporation.
Right.
So if you take away the distinction between individuals and corporations in politics,
mm-hmm.
that means that even if you have a donation cap, well, a corporation can just create a shell corporation for the purpose of getting
yeah,
more money.
Absolutely. And do it online in a millisecond.
Mm-hmm.
And stack them up. Yeah, it's you can. It's almost making copies of yourself.
Right.
That's where it becomes absurd. And I think there's a modern interpretation needs to be made. I mean, the argument that needs to be made in front of the Supreme Court has to be a very modernized one, which is just that with in the digital age, the limitless power of a corporation has to be checked at some point, and especially in the political arena, in the area of speech is sort of absurd. I mean, already they've, you know, it's legal for a corporation to lie, which, you know, it comes basically as an advertising thing. Obviously, Coke is not life. That is a lie. But because it's, you know, an advertising phrase, it's okay because on an, you know, on a speech level, you can articulate your own sales point, and we don't mean it's actually life. It's a, you know, and so because that's legally a possibility, that gives Fox News the legal ability to call themselves fair and balanced and make stuff up constantly. It's stunning.
Yeah, no, I mean, we certainly, you know, we're already seeing, you know, things like Fox News, we're already seeing a tremendous amount of influence in of money in politics. And, you know, like I said, it can get a lot worse really, really fast, really soon if this one case goes badly. I'm actually hoping the newest justice will help us there.
Mm-hmm.
Justice Sotomayor did some very good work
right.
on corporate or campaign finance regulation when back before she became a judge. And this will actually be the first case that she'll hear. She's the newest member, and the other justices are going to need her vote somewhere along the way.
So they might play her way a little bit.
That's what I'm hoping.
Yeah, me too. We got to go. Ian Millhiser, thank you so much. Center for American Progress. It's centerforamericanprogress.org. Is that the website?
Yeah. It's americanprogress.org.
Americanprogress.org. Thank you so much for your insight. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Hal.
Absolutely. Cheers. This is Hal Sparks. I've been filling in today for Stephanie Miller while she and the Mooks are away on vacation. Now, the show's almost over, and I promised you there will be a couple things. First of all this week, the show is airing live at the Minnesota State Fair. So if you go to the Minnesota State Fair and you hear my voice, I'm not on the tilt-a-whirl stuffing my mouth with cotton candy or getting an elephant ear. It's just playing live if you get a chance to hear it. But here's the good news. It's always good to go out on a piece of good news. I have a lot of hope. You know, I'm the kind of person who, believes the message of hope, and I think we'll have a lot of room for it. Here it comes. This is the big news. The winner for the Emmy for Outstanding Performer in an Animated Program for Biker Mice from Mars on Fox, Jim Ward, as Imore the Crusher. Congratulations to Jim. He won an Emmy for Outstanding Performer in an Animated Program, and it wasn't this one. Because it gets a little animated around here, but you guys can't see that, which is probably best. I'm Al Sparks, filling in for Stephanie Miller all week. We will see you tomorrow. 1-800-STEPH-12, stephaniemiller.com. I'm on Twitter. You can follow me on there, at Hal Sparks, or on Facebook or MySpace. It'll be fantastic. Tomorrow I'm going to talk a little bit more about the stimulus package and how it's actually working, cash for clunkers, and how that actually played out, and yet they're still painting it as not working. And we'll deal a little bit more with the healthcare debate, which I think the debate is over. I think it's now about messaging. How do we best convey the message? And I would love to hear your ideas on that as well. I certainly will have plenty of my own. I'm Hal Sparks. You're listening to the Stephanie Miller Show. We'll see you tomorrow.